coming up on this episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy.
And the reason we're really looking at cholesterol is because it's one factor that influences somebody's risk of cardiovascular disease, right?
Hey everyone, it's Dr. Mark. You know, I'm all about the benefits of healthy fats, and I've had some patients find that a high-fat keto diet is the best way to support better cognition, lose some stubborn belly fat, and even reverse certain signs of aging. But I often hear them say that it can be really hard to stick to, especially if they have busy lives and they need food they can grab on the go. So when I found Perfect Keto, I was really excited. One of my favorite items from Perfect Keto is their nut butters. They're made with MCT oil, macadamia nuts, cashews, and coconut, and they're plenty of healthy fats in there to keep you fuller longer. Plus, they have amazing flavors like chocolate hazelnut, almond butter and jelly, snickerdoodle, and macadamia vanilla, all formulated to taste great while keeping you in ketosis. My favorite is the chocolate hazelnut. I love that it comes in an easy, resealable squeeze pack that's really handy for traveling. Their keto cookies are also a really tasty way to enjoy an occasional healthy treat. They went through more than 10 recipes combined with rigorous blood and ketone testing to make sure their cookies didn't spike blood sugar. Since turning my patients and friends on to Perfect Keto, I've had multiple people tell me they find it much easier to stick with their diet. I'm all about finding what diet works best for your unique body, but whatever it is, it's important to be prepared with different options so you don't get stuck in a food emergency. If you're trying keto, be sure to check out Perfect Keto snacks and keep some of them on hand to help you stay successful. Right now is a great time to stock up. They're offering Doctor's Pharmacy listeners 20% off plus free shipping with the code Dr. Mark. Just go to perfectketo.com/Dr. Mark, that's DRMARK, and use the code Dr. Mark to get 20% off plus free shipping, and make sure you try their nut butters and keto cookies. Now let's get back to this week's episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy. Welcome to The Doctor's Pharmacy. I'm Dr. Mark Hyman, and it's a special episode of The Doctor's Pharmacy called House Call. And this episode is with my friend and colleague, Dr. Elizabeth Boham, and we're talking about cholesterol and heart disease and what is the truth and what is fiction and what should we do when our doctor tells us to take a statin, which every doctor pretty much does, regardless of our age, sex, or whatever is going on. It's the number one drug sold on the planet, and we need to think about why and if it's actually good for us or what we actually should be doing about our cholesterol. So Dr. Boham is an incredible physician. She's one of my good friends and has been working with me for 20 plus years now, I guess. It's a long, long time. And she's one of the leaders in functional medicine in the world, teaches all over the place now, mostly from her house on Zoom, but really is a part of the faculty of the Institute for Functional Medicine. She's a huge contributor to the field and is what every doctor should be, which is not only an MD, but she's a registered dietitian and an exercise physiologist. And I'm super jealous of all that. We both went to Cornell, so we have that in common. And it's great to have you back on the Doctor's Pharmacy list.
Thank you, Mark. It's great to be here.
All right, let's get right into it. So cholesterol. If you are a person in America and you've been to your doctor, you likely have had your cholesterol checked. And you probably have been told you need to get your cholesterol down. And you might have even been told that you should be taking a drug called a statin. So tell us, what is this whole hullabaloo about cholesterol and statins, and why should we even care about cholesterol? And is it really the thing we should be worried about with heart disease?
Oh, such great questions. I mean, it's estimated that 50% of people in this country and in Europe and 40% worldwide have what's considered elevated cholesterol. And obviously, that, you know, for those 50% of people, not all of them have to be really concerned about that cholesterol number, right? It doesn't mean that all 50% of us have to be taking a medication to lower that cholesterol. Mm. And so people come in all the time with those questions of, is this cholesterol too high? And how do I get it down? Do I need to get it down? And the reason we're really looking at cholesterol is because it's one factor that influences somebody's risk of cardiovascular disease, right?
I like how you said one factor, not the factor.
Exactly. One piece of the puzzle. And for a lot of people, it's not even an important piece of the puzzle, right? But for it is one piece of the puzzle, especially for people who have a really high cholesterol, very like familial hypercholesterolemia,
genetic
yeah. Absolutely. We're talking about LDLs like in the 190s, and we'll talk more about those numbers, total cholesterol in the 300s. You know, there is an association with vascular disease. It can cause plaque buildup, and that can cause, if the plaque is building up around the arteries around the heart, that can cause a heart attack, or in the arteries leading to the brain, it can cause a stroke. So for some people, it's something that's very important. For other people, it's something that's giving us a lot of information potentially about their health and where do we need to focus. And so I think it's an important thing for us to talk about. Like, what are all these numbers mean, right? People are so confused. What does this number mean?
Yeah.
Do I really need to be worried?
So we're going to get deep into all the things you should be thinking about
yes.
if you want to prevent heart disease, cholesterol being one of them.
One of them.
And maybe not the most important one, by the mm-hmm. way. Because 2/3 of people who have heart attacks actually have prediabetes or diabetes, and it's mostly undiagnosed, that 70% of people who come in have pretty good cholesterol who have heart attacks, about 50% have normal cholesterol. And,
right.
you know, and it's really striking that we're kind of like wondering about this condition, which is actually not so cut and dried.
I think
I want to get into the numbers. So let's talk about cholesterol, because in my opinion, and I've written a lot about this, the test that you get when you go to your doctor is antiquated.
It's
outdated. It's not the cholesterol test you should be getting. And it doesn't give you the right information to make a decision about what to do.
Yep.
So you typically get your total cholesterol, your triglycerides, your HDL, your LDL. Those are fine. But tell us about what these numbers mean and what cholesterol tests we should be doing that your doctor may not be ordering. And that is available through Quest or LabCorp through your insurance.
Absolutely. So when you get your traditional cholesterol panel done, your traditional lipid panel done, they're giving you the LDL cholesterol, the HDL cholesterol, the total cholesterol. And that's one piece of information, like you said, but we're missing a lot of information there. So it's really important. I love this analogy of the dirt and dump trucks. So dirt and dump trucks, and think of all the dump trucks that are going around carrying dirt. And we can make this analogy with cholesterol. Mm. So think of your cholesterol like the dirt, and the dump trucks are the particles carrying around your cholesterol. So what we're learning is it's not just the amount of dirt somebody has that's important. Mm. It's the amount of dump trucks that they have carrying around that dirt. Mm. And that the size of the dump trucks are actually really important. And so when you get a typical lipid panel done, you know, you're just finding out the amount of dirt that you have and how much of it is LDL and HDL and triglycerides. And that's important. And we'll talk about that. But what's even more important, or at least as important, right, is the amount of dump trucks you have carrying around that dirt. Mm. And what we're learning is that, or what we've learned, is that the if you have small dump trucks, so if you have a certain amount of dirt, you could either have a few big dump trucks carrying it around or a lot of small dump trucks carrying it around.
Yeah.
And what we're learning is that those small dump trucks, if you have too many small dump trucks, that's actually more concerning.
Yeah.
That they can get into the artery lining more, they can cause more plaque buildup, they can get that it can help that cholesterol get oxidized through oxidative stress. It's much more dangerous.
Yeah.
So the size of those dump trucks you have carrying around your cholesterol is critically important.
Yeah.
And something we look at all the time.
I mean, the way I think about it is, and another way I kind of look at it is, you know, the number you get on your test is the weight of your cholesterol. So it's milligrams per deciliter. It's just basically the weight.
Yep.
But it doesn't tell you if that cholesterol is made up of 1,000 particles or 100 particles.
Right.
So you could have a cholesterol of 150 and it could be 5,000 particles or it could be 500 particles of cholesterol. And that makes a huge difference in your risk of heart disease. And you can't tell from a regular cholesterol test whether you have a lot of particles or whether they're big particles or small particles.
Yep.
So I think about it sort of like golf balls and beach balls. You know, beach balls are these big, light, fluffy balls that you can bounce and don't hurt anything. And the golf ball is small, but it hits you in the head, it'll knock you out, right? And the golf balls are the things that are the small particles that are dangerous that bang up against the arteries and cause the plaque to develop and cause heart attacks. So Absolutely. You can't tell that from a regular test. You can have smaller, large LDL, smaller, large HDL, smaller, large triglycerides. And the triglycerides are a little different. It's the big triglycerides that are a problem, not the small ones. But you can really get a sense from these newer tests what's really going on. Because I've seen people with a cholesterol 300. Their HDLs, which is, sounds terrible, right? Because you're supposed to be under 200. Their LDL might be 150, which sounds terrible because it should be under 70. Their HDL is like 110. So they have really high cholesterol. They're skinny. They're healthy. They don't have diabetes, high blood pressure. They don't smoke. They're older. Often little old ladies have this kind of cholesterol. There's no evidence that these people are at risk of heart disease because they have large, light, fluffy particles. They might have no small particles. They might have the perfect size and shape of all their cholesterol markers. And their risk is really low. And I remember talking to a colleague, more of a mentor, Dr. Peter Libby, who's the chief of cardiovascular medicine at Harvard, who's written the textbook, you know, on heart disease at all cardiology study. And I said, you know, Peter, I have these patients, these little ladies, their cholesterol is 300 and they have this and that. Like, this was like 20 years ago. I mean, like, would you treat these people with a statin or a drug? He said, absolutely not. You know, there's no evidence that these people are at risk, even though their cholesterol is so abnormal. So you can't just go by the cholesterol test that your doctor does.
Right.
So you need something called what?
Like particle size testing. It's telling us about those things that are carrying around your cholesterol.
Yeah. So LabCorp does NMR.
NMR.
Quest does something called CardioIQ. Which is similar. And you can ask your doctor for these. And you shouldn't stand for any other test but these tests. And then they tell you so much. So tell us, how do you get a profile that is with these small, dense, dangerous HDL and LDL?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So there's a lot of lifestyle that impacts the size of your LDL particles, right? The size of those, you know, are they small and dense and dangerous, or are they big and fluffy and not so dangerous? I mean, there's always a genetic component, right? There's a genetic component, but then there's our lifestyle. And we know that metabolic syndrome where people are insulin resistant, gaining weight around the belly, they typically have lower HDL. They typically have higher triglycerides, but they also typically have more of these small, dense LDLs, which are more concerning. And so lifestyle makes a huge impact on the size of those LDL particles.
And which part of your lifestyle? What's the biggest thing?
The diet.
Your diet. What diet causes you to have the dangerous kind of cholesterol?
That sad diet, the standard American diet, right? That's the one that you know, that full of carbohydrates and sugar and refined and processed foods and lots of alcohol and, you know,
it's the starch and sugar that drives it. And what does that do to the body that causes these particles and it actually leads to the high triglycerides, the low HDL, the small particles.
Right. It's that whole process of insulin resistance, and it results in this really unhealthy pattern. And so, you know, we sometimes get clues of that with a standard lipid panel, right? We sometimes get clues when somebody has a low HDL. That's the one, the HDL is the one you want higher. And for men, you want it at least over 40, and for women, at least over 50. And then if that triglycerides are
I'm
over-
I'm like 50 and 60. I'm more aggressive than you.
Yeah, well, that's really true.
Like, what's optimal, right?
What's optimal,
if you're a guy,
right?
If your cholesterol is, HDL is 40, probably not optimal. It should be over 50. Right?
It really should. It really should. You're right. It's not optimal.
I'm a
optimal.
Tough customer here.
And then the triglycerides, you want at least under 150. Or what would you say? What's
70.
Optimal? There you go, for triglycerides.
So if your triglycerides are over 100, you're definitely flirting with danger. And there are, you know, there's some genetics involved. We're going to talk about the genetics in a minute. But it is usually a sign of increased carbohydrate load. Like not, and I don't mean broccoli. I mean like flour and sugar.
Absolutely.
Right.
So you know, you can get some sense of if somebody is prone to metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance with that. But then the particle size testing also gives us a lot of information. The NMR, for example, gives you something called your insulin resistance score.
Yeah.
So you can get a sense based on the analysis of the particles of cholesterol that you have, how at risk you are for insulin resistance. So it's just one more piece of the puzzle.
And I see people with a cholesterol of 150.
Yep.
Who have like 2,000 particles of LDL, which should be under 1,000, who have like 900 particles of small LDL, which should be under 300 ideally, probably less than 90 is perfect. And you see that often. And yet their doctor, well, your cholesterol is 150, it's fine, you know? And so you really can get duped by just looking at the total numbers. If it's 300, it might be fine. If it's 150, it might be highly dangerous to you.
Right.
And it's not so easy without looking at the specific tests. So it's super important. And so what you mentioned is that insulin resistance is the driver of this, which is prediabetes, metabolic syndrome. And to some degree or another, 88% of Americans are metabolically unhealthy and have some degree of this. 50% have prediabetes or type 2 diabetes. Like every other American has diabetes or prediabetes. Mm-hmm. That's crazy. 75% overweight, and every one of those people is some degree of poor metabolic health.
Yep.
So if this is true, what else does this diet do that accelerates heart disease? Because we now know that it's not just the cholesterol. Like I said, you could have cholesterol 300 and be fine. Mm-hmm. There's a special ingredient you need in order to cause the heart disease. What is that special ingredient?
So it's inflammation and oxidative stress, right? Okay.
So inflammation seems to cause everything these days, from depression to cancer to heart disease to diabetes to everything else. So what is the cause of the inflammation in these patients with insulin resistance?
So a lot of times, I mean, there's many things, right? But it's our belly fat because we know that that fat around our belly, when we get insulin resistant, we gain more weight around our belly. And we know that visceral fat or weight around the belly, the apple shape is more inflammatory. It secretes all these inflammatory markers and increases inflammation in the body. And so when their weight around their belly goes down, when we get that waist hip ratio better, that inflammation goes down.
So basically what you're saying is that fat around your belly is not just holding up your pants, that it's an immunologically active organ.
Yep.
It produces these molecules we call adipose cytokines. You've heard of the cytokine storm with COVID.
Yep.
Well, it's that same chronic cytokine storm that's being released from these fat cells in your belly. They're not just average. I mean, you have fat in your legs or your butt. Yep. It's not going to do that. These fat cells in your belly are super inflammatory. So then you get the inflammation, which leads to oxidative stress, which then causes what problem with the cholesterol?
Right. So when your LDL cholesterol gets oxidized.
And what is that?
Think of oxidative stress like excessive free radicals or rusting in the body. But, you know, we're always making free radicals in many different cellular processes in the body. But when there's too many of them or you don't have enough antioxidants to squelch those free radicals. So if your diet's not rich enough in the polyphenols or those phytonutrients or your vegetables, then what happens is you get more oxidative stress. And that oxidative stress can shift that LDL cholesterol. And it's that oxidized LDL that's more damaging and more likely to cause plaque buildup and that will lead to heart disease.
So it's basically rancid cholesterol in your bloodstream that's the problem that gets oxidized, which is like you said, rusting or apple turning brown or your skin wrinkling from too much sun. These are all signs of oxidative. But this happens inside of you and it leads to this inflammatory process, this oxidative stress. And that's what causes the heart disease. And some of the interesting studies I've seen, like the Jupiter study, very big trial from Harvard on heart disease, fascinating to me that people who had high LDL, but no inflammation had very low risk.
Yes.
People who had high inflammation, but kind of okay cholesterol, they were at risk. And those with high cholesterol and high inflammation had the most risk. Yes. So I think we have to be focused on inflammation, what's causing that. And it may be that, you know, the statin drugs, turns out, The benefits may not have a lot to do with cholesterol lowering.
But they're anti-inflammatory. They're
very powerful anti-inflammatory drugs, which is, quote, a side effect.
Yep.
But it actually works. Now, there's a lot of better ways to get rid of inflammation besides taking statin drugs. And so when you're talking about people's cholesterol, you know, how do you decide, you know, what to do for each patient? How do you decide from a functional medicine perspective, you know, how to work these patients up to decide whether that should go on a drug or whether you just do lifestyle? How do you figure that out?
I mean, it is a complex process, right? Where we're taking a really detailed history and we're looking at more than just those numbers. We're looking at what are their markers of oxidative stress. You know, we can measure those. We can measure oxidized LDL. We can measure 8-hydroxydeoxyguanosine and lipid peroxides. All of these biomarkers that give us a sense of, is there oxidative stress?
And by the way, these kinds of tests are not things you'll typically get at your regular doctor. You know, at the Ultra Wellness Center here in Lenox, Massachusetts, we do functional medicine, which takes a deeper dive into the root causes, into these diagnostic tests, which are not available usually through your traditional doctor. They may not be interested in or know what to do or how to interpret even fasting insulin, which they don't even do. So we really are excited to help people figure out how to look at their risk and design a strategy that's personalized for them using functional medicine. And we see people from all over the world at the Ultra Wellness Center doing like Zoom consults now. So it's pretty easy to get access.
You know, and it's fascinating because there's so many pieces to the puzzle. And so when you find somebody with high oxidative stress, you ask that question, why? Why is there high oxidative stress? Is it their poor diet? Is it you know, inflammation?
Is it their microbiome?
Is it their microbiome? You know, is it a toxin?
Heavy metals,
like a toxin or some
pollution.
Other. Yes.
You know, all the smoke, the wildfires in California, that increases risk of cardiovascular disease.
Absolutely. So, you know, it's really important to think about all the different things that can lead to oxidative stress and inflammation, and then try to tease out what is it for that individual person that we need to focus on. So I think that's important for some people and a lot of Americans. There's so much that's lifestyle related, right? But for some people, their lifestyle is great and it's more toxin related that we really need to work on that. Or like you mentioned, the microbiome is an area that's fascinating. And we're learning so much about how it influences inflammation in the body.
Yeah.
You know, microbiome in your gut as well as microbiome in your mouth, right? And gingivitis and how much that we've known for years that impacts risk of heart disease because of its inflammatory properties. So those are important things that we need to really investigate and look at.
Yeah, so true. You know, I'm just thinking about, you know, how we work with these patients. So we look at all these diagnostic tests that may not be looked at. We look at their overall cardiovascular risk, their family history. We may look at diagnostic tests. We may send them for a heart scan, look at calcium, carotid ultrasound, look at particle size, look at inflammation markers, oxidative stress markers, the microbiome, heavy metals. We might look at other factors like homocysteine, which looks at B vitamin status. We look at lipoprotein A and a bunch of other factors that give us a more rounded picture of what's going on. So we're not just focused like a laser on cholesterol. And the reason, it seems to me, that we are so hyper-focused on cholesterol is we have a good drug to treat it, right? So it's all pharmaceutical-driven, whereas when you look at the data, two-thirds of all people entering into an emergency room with a heart attack have either prediabetes or diabetes, and most of them are undiagnosed.
Right. So when you say—
So if two-thirds of heart attacks are from sugar, not cholesterol issues— And we're just focusing on cholesterol. It seems like we're missing the mark here.
We often are. And when we're saying, okay, this is high. I mean, so many people come back with, you know, high on their lab work. And it doesn't necessarily, like you said, mean it's anything to be concerned about.
Right.
And then there's so many people who come back without that H, that high level. And they do need to be concerned.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, you know, statins have a role. But let's talk about the statins for a minute because it's very controversial. You know, it, like any drug, there are benefits, there are risks, there are side effects, and there's the right patient for the job, right? So how do you come to sort of decide what you should do with a patient?
Yeah, I mean, you really want to get a good detailed family history. You know, I think that there are some people who are at very high risk of vascular disease. And for people who have a strong family history, which means that if you have a first degree relative, which would be a parent or a sibling who has had an early heart attack. So for a man less than 55 or a woman less than 65, that means they've had diagnosed heart disease because of plaque at an early age. Yeah. You know, that those people who have that type of family history need to be more careful.
Or were they smokers? Were they very overweight? Absolutely. Did they have diabetes? Like, what are the other factors? So I always look at that as well, because
you have to.
I remember my grandfather, you know, everybody in his family, like I think he had 9 siblings. Everybody had heart attacks in their 50s. Mm-hmm. You know, they all had bypasses, heart attacks, and they weren't like significantly overweight. But they were pretty high risk as a family. And he was deaf, so he couldn't hear. So he really couldn't get a job, like a white-collar job. So he had a blue-collar job, which was basically loading New York Times, big bundles of New York Times onto the trucks from the conveyor belt. So he was constantly working out all day long and was very, very strong and healthy. And every night he would go out in Queens and he would walk down the street and feed all the alley cats. So he walked every night after dinner, which we now know is a very good way to improve your health. And he didn't really get heart disease until his 80s.
Right.
And they all got it in their 50s. So it's, and his diet wasn't the best, right? But still, even with simple lifestyle things that can make a big difference.
Absolutely. So, right. So you bring up a great point that genetics and family history is just one piece of the puzzle. It's not what makes all, you know, makes us make all the decisions in the world, right. But we take that into account,
yeah,
as well as all their other risk factors, like you mentioned, like type 2 diabetes, and are they a smoker? And, you know, so we really have to pay attention to all of those lifestyle
factors.
And high
blood pressure, you know, a lot of high blood mm-hmm. pressure is a big factor in heart disease. But again, high blood pressure is usually caused by the same thing, which is insulin resistance.
So often.
Sleep apnea. Yeah, it's very, very common.
Yeah.
And you know, I just sort of recall a patient. I'd love to hear any cases you'd like to share. But I just remembered a patient I saw was about 50 years old. And he came to see me. And he had a little bit of belly fat, maybe 20 pounds overweight. He'd had a heart attack, had a stent, and was freaked out, you know, at 50 yeah. years old to have his heart be at risk like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on a pile of medications when I saw him. He was on a statin, a beta blocker, blood thinner, you know, calcium,
the whole cocktail,
you know, blood pressure pills, you know, pretty much everything. And I said, well, listen, are you willing to sort of make some changes? And so we totally revamped his diet. We got rid of all the junk out of his diet, very, very low sugar starch diet, lots of good fats,
mm-hmm.
Lots of fiber, got him on some basic supplements, you know, B vitamins, folate, and also fish oil, got him on an exercise program. And over the course of a year, you know, he lost, I think, I don't know, maybe he was more overweight. I think he lost almost 50 pounds. He was able to normalize all of his numbers, and his blood sugar was high.
Yep.
His insulin was high. He wasn't quote diabetic, but he was pre-diabetic, mm-hmm. and they completely missed it.
Yep.
Like it's just staggering to me that after 30 years that I've been doing this, that the yeah. literature has been there, that doctors don't check for pre-diabetes on a regular basis, which affects basically one out of every two Americans
yes.
or more. And so you check that by measuring insulin, A1C, a glucose tolerance test with insulin. There's ways to look at it and look at particle number, particle yep. size. And he lost the weight, and he was able to reverse all of his numbers, and he was able to get off all his medication, including statins. And his numbers were better off the statins than they were on it
mm-hmm.
by fixing all these lifestyle factors. And right. he's been heart attack free for the last 20 years.
Woohoo!
So I think we are so stuck in this paradigm of treating the symptom, the cholesterol, yeah. instead of the cause.
Absolutely. That's critical. That's
yeah, you've, a good story. You've had some patients too, right? So
Yeah. So, you know, the first one, I wanted to bring up the two cases I wanted to talk about today were people with this in-between cholesterol, like where they really wanted to know what to do. They weren't crazy high risk, but they were told they should go on medication. And they came to me to say, well, is that the right decision or what else can I do? So the first one was a 45-year-old gentleman who was told his cholesterol was too high. He didn't have a strong family history of heart disease, and but his total cholesterol was what, 225. His good cholesterol's HDL was 37,
which is low.
It's too low.
50, right?
His triglycerides were 185 fasting,
which is high, right?
Should
be ideally under 70.
And his LDLs were 145. So, you know, his doctor said, you know what, I think you should start some medication. And he said, well, you know what, I want to see what else I can do. So he came to see us, which was great. And because, you know, a lot of times with patterns like this, we can make a huge change. Mm. So we did that special, we did an NMR lipoprofile. So we looked at those particle sizes and we saw that he had a lot of the small, dense LDL particles. His pattern, they sometimes give you a pattern. Are you pattern A or pattern B? Pattern B being the more concerning, you have yeah. too many small, dense LDLs, and that's what he had. He looked like he had a high risk for insulin resistance, which we knew even before we did the test, but because his waist-to-hip ratio was too high, his HDL was too low, his triglycerides were too high. So it was obvious, but that test confirmed that, right? It said you have a high risk for insulin resistance based on your cholesterol panel. And we also—
Well, before you go there,
yeah.
I just want to point out, because this is really a very easy, cheap way to check to see if you have insulin resistance. And it's a far better predictor of your risk of heart attacks than your LDL, which yes. is your triglyceride to HDL ratio. And this guy had a ratio of about 5.
Right.
If it's over 1, mm-hmm. not great. If it's over 2, you're in trouble. He
yes.
was 5.
Yes.
And that pattern of high triglycerides, low HDL is what you see in these patients with prediabetes, even though they might have a normal cholesterol. I mean, his was 225, but I've seen people with, you know, a total of 150, triglycerides of 300, HDL of 29. I'm terrified for these patients.
Absolutely.
Even though their total cholesterol is 150, and
you're
it sounds
absolutely
ideal.
Right. Right. That's where we get really nervous, because we know that's such a pro-inflammatory process. And what we know about heart attacks, especially sudden heart attacks, right? There's typically, I always sort of draw this picture for my patients of the inside of the artery. And so often we think when somebody has a heart attack, the plaque just keeps building. You know, they're 50% blocked, and then they're 90% blocked, and then they're 100% blocked, and they have a heart attack. But what we know is that sometimes you're only 30% blocked, but if that's inflamed, if that blockage is inflamed, kind of like that can rupture and then cause a significant blockage.
It's like a pimple popping that then your body protects by making a blood clot in your artery.
Right. And that's really often what we see when somebody has a sudden heart attack, right? That blockage is just ruptures. And so it's often missed. People aren't necessarily coming in with years of chest pain and, you know, shortness of breath, those things that we see as people get older. They just have a sudden rupture of that plaque. So yeah, those are the situations you get really nervous. And a lot of times you see a lot of inflammation. So we also did an oxidized LDL with him, which was high and concerning.
That's the rancid cholesterol.
Yep. That's that rancid cholesterol. So, you know, we really, for him, with all those signs of insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, the diet for him was that really low glycemic diet. We needed to work to lower those carbohydrates, to lower the sugar. You know, we know that triglycerides really decrease when you cut out juices, sugars, alcohol.
And they're basically fats that are made in the liver when you eat sugar and starch, right?
Yes.
They're not produced by eating fat.
Nope, sugar. And you can lower your triglycerides pretty quickly when you pull out the alcohol, the juice, the lots. If some people doing too much fruit.
Flour and sugar.
Flour and sugar. Absolutely. Sugar. So when you cut that out, you can bring your triglycerides down really pretty substantially, pretty quickly. So we really focused on lowering his carbohydrate load, you know, all the bad carbs, right? And you also focus on giving him more of the omega-3 fats, because we know those omega-3 fats are really anti-inflammatory, and they can 2 to 4 grams of omega-3s a day can lower your triglycerides and raise up that HDL.
And this is FDA approved as a drug.
Absolutely.
Quote, a drug, which is fish oil, which is a prescription that you can buy to lower your triglycerides.
And you can get it from food, right? Like a can of sardines, 3 ounces of sardines has about 2 grams of the omega-3s in it.
That's what I'm having for lunch.
That's my favorite lunch. Sardines on a salad with some walnuts. Very heart healthy. So we made that switch with his diet, you know, and what was amazing and what I love to see is when in like 3 months, we repeated that NMR lipoprofile, and he went from having too many of the small dense LDLs to having, he was now considered pattern A. He had more of the big fluffy LDLs. His HDL improved. Now it wasn't yet optimal, but I think it got up to like 47 in 3 months. His triglycerides came down to 120. So maybe not, you know, this was just 3 months of doing this. We can see really quick changes in people's bodies with making these changes in lifestyle, which is phenomenal.
Yeah. And I think one of the other thing I want to talk about, this is a great case, but you know, you're able to change his diet and improve things, but you know, one of the things that we're really bad at in medicine is personalizing care. Mm. And there's no place that's more important to personalize your care than dealing with your heart attack risk and cholesterol, because it's different for different people.
That's very true.
And what I've seen, I'm sure you've seen this over the years, is people respond dramatically differently to the same diet. So typically we're told by the American Heart Association that we should have less than 5% of our diet as saturated fat. Although breast milk is 25% saturated fat, so maybe we should ban breast milk, according to the American Heart Association. I don't know about that. But it's really important to get saturated fat in your diet, because it's a building block for cholesterol, and which is not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, your cholesterol makes your hormones. It makes the nerve coverings for your nerves. It's part of your brain.
Yep.
I mean, it's really important. A lot of your hormones are made from cholesterol, your sex hormones. And what I found is, you know, depending on the person, their responses are very different to diet.
Yes.
And I've talked to Dr. Ronald Krause, who's one of the world's experts in cholesterol on this. And he says, yeah, there's a lot of heterogeneity. And I've seen this, just two cases come to mind. One was of a woman who was overweight, who was clearly pre-diabetic, whose triglycerides were 300, which is really high. It should be under 70. Her HDL was like 30, which is terrible. Her total was, you know, probably, you know, 250, 60. It was pretty high. She had a lot of small particles, a lot of overall particles, just way
metabolic
high.
Syndrome.
Yeah. And she struggled with weight loss and diet. So I put her on a high saturated fat diet. Yeah. I put her on basically butter and coconut oil and almost a ketogenic diet. And it was striking. She never could lose weight. She dropped 20 pounds like that.
Yep.
Her cholesterol dropped 100 points. Her triglycerides dropped over 200 points. Her HDL went up 30 points. And you just, like, you just can't get that result with a drug.
Nope.
And so I did that with her, and saturated fat was the cure for her cholesterol, not the cause. But another guy was this super fit, mid-50s biker, would bike 50 miles a day, super healthy. And his cholesterol wasn't great. And he had a genetic issue with his cholesterol and had this sort of more of these small particles. And so I put him on, I tried and said, let's try just do more of a ketogenic diet, see what happens, or more saturated fat. His cholesterol turned into terrible.
Yeah.
So we had to totally change gears and get him off saturated fat. I think we'll soon be able to do a test, which is a cheek swab or a drop of blood, measure your genetics, and figure out which one are you. Are you somebody who should be eating more fat and saturated fat, or more carbohydrates, or more of the right foods, different kinds of fat? We're not quite there yet, but I think in functional medicine and here at the Ultra Wellness Center, we can, on an individual basis, really come to learn what is the right thing for this particular person.
That's really important. That's so important, because what's really key with diet is personalizing it, right? That's when we get the most benefit from, you know, our nutrition intervention. And I think what you mentioned with the first woman, the reason you saw such an improvement with the ketogenic diet is you lowered her insulin so much, right? So we know that the carbohydrates that you eat cause your insulin to spike. So when your insulin is high, and you can't lose weight because your insulin is high because it's causing you to put on weight around the belly. When you change to a diet that doesn't cause your insulin to go up, which is like a ketogenic diet. I mean, that's the extreme, right? But you can do some things in between too. But then that insulin doesn't go up, and that's when we can see huge benefits for some people in that situation.
Yeah. It's really true. I mean, insulin, you know, for the most part, and like the one guy, it wasn't because he was so fit.
Yep.
And there's genetic variations, but for most people out there, it is really the most common thing. And you know, aside from getting the NMR particle test, getting a measure of your fasting insulin, really great. If you can get an insulin test after you have a sugar load, that's even better.
Yep.
Because by the time your blood sugar goes up, you're down the road, way down the road.
Yes.
I mean, it's a late stage phenomena. You even have your blood sugar going up fasting, and then 2 hours after a sugar load, it's, you know, you see a little earlier, but, you know, doing these tests for decades, I just see this pattern over and over again. Yeah. You can have perfectly normal sugar, perfectly. I mean, I had this one woman who was really overweight, and she had a giant belly, and clearly she was metabolic syndrome. She had high triglycerides, low HDL, the same pattern. But when I measured her glucose tolerance test and her A1C, perfectly normal. Like her fasting blood sugar was normal. Her average blood sugar was normal. Her 1 and 2 hour blood sugar test, like normal, like her fasting was in the 80s, after it was like 110, but I measured her insulin. Now, normal insulin should be under 5. Mm-hmm. It's over 10, kind of in trouble. Her fasting insulin was like 30.
Yep.
And then we did a sugar load and her insulin went up to 200, 250.
Yep.
And it should be under 30 after a sugar load. So she was like 10 times normal, and it was keeping her blood sugar normal, but it was driving all this weight gain and inflammation and abnormal cholesterol. So you really have to dig in a different way than your traditional doctors are digging in.
Absolutely. Those people can't, they have such a hard time losing weight, especially if you don't pull the carbohydrates too low.
Yeah, I mean, she lost 50 pounds like that.
Once you pulled the carbohydrates out.
Yeah, it's so easy. I feel embarrassed about it because, you know, it's like what we're telling people to do is so simple. But when you understand the biology, which is what functional medicine really is about, it's understanding each of our unique biology, looking at things that traditional doctors don't look at function at differences in the responses to different insults like diet and toxins and various things. So we have a really different scope. And you know, at our Cleveland Clinic, where I also work, one of the leading doctors there, cardiologist Stan Hazen, has done incredible work looking at the microbiome and how the environment and the gut can increase your risk of heart disease and how certain foods increase certain problems. And it's just fascinating to think, you know, here at the number one heart hospital in the world, they're going, wait a minute, maybe we should be looking at poop.
Right.
And so the paradigm's breaking down, right? The hyperlaser focus on cholesterol, which we're talking about today, is only one small part of the story. And getting into the nuances is really important in order to really look at your risk and design the right program for you. And that's what you do here at the Ultra Wellness Center. It's what we do. We've been doing for decades. And I think it gives people a chance, if they're concerned about their heart disease risk, to come up with a personalized plan that can help determine their best outcomes and reduce all these factors.
Yeah. So, you know, the second case I had, she was not at risk for insulin resistance significantly. You know, her insulin, I don't really remember what it was, but it wasn't that concerning to me. But she was also concerned about her cholesterol. You know, she was 55. Her doctor had just checked her cholesterol. Her LDL cholesterol was 160. And so he was recommending some medication. She didn't have a strong family history. But when we looked deeper, or when we, you know, her cholesterol also showed her triglycerides were okay at 90. Her HDL was 55. Again, maybe not perfect, but, you know, it was really that LDL cholesterol I was a little more concerned about. We did particle size testing on her, and she didn't have too many of those small, dense LDLs. She was more pattern A, more of the big, fluffy LDLs, which made me happy to see. And but she's like, you know what? Let's bring down, I want to bring down this LDL cholesterol. And so with her, the focus in the diet was a little bit different. You know, she did, she was about 10 pounds overweight, so she wanted to lose some weight. So we focused on that. And then we also really focused on her protein, because protein's really important as well when we're talking about cholesterol, because there's some vegetable proteins that can help with lowering, they can help with lowering that LDL cholesterol. So beans and legumes, nuts and seeds, these are vegetable sources of protein that have plant sterols in them. Yeah. And they can help bind to the cholesterol in the gut and lower your LDL cholesterol. And, you know, so when I have a situation like this, you know, I really talk to them about balancing where they're getting their protein from. More of that vegan diet, right? Where they're getting some of their protein from a vegetable source like beans and legumes, healthy forms of soy, nuts and seeds, and some of their protein from an animal source, but maybe not, you know, more of as that condom meat as you speak about. So I think that's a really important area to focus on. So she, with, you know, 3 months or so, the weight came down. And when we rechecked her, we saw that LDL cholesterol come down to like 130. And so, and her HDL even went up higher, which was great to see. So, you know, she had a nice improvement with shifting her diet, but we just focused a little bit differently than we did with the first gentleman.
And, you know, you're right. I think you bring up a lot of very important points. It's not just what you take out of your diet, like sugar and starch, it's what you put in your diet. And using compounds that are naturally found in plants, like plant sterols that come in beans and nuts and seeds and high fiber, you can really have a big impact. And I think, you know, one of the things I like to use is extra fiber as something called PGX, which is basically from a root of a Japanese vegetable called cognac. It's not like the alcohol, it's K-O-N-J-A-C. And it's a fibrous root. You can actually make noodles out of it. There's these shirataki noodles. So you can have pasta in a sense, but it actually is zero calories. It's all fiber and it blocks the absorption of cholesterol from your gut. So adding more fiber plays a huge role.
Yes.
Changing the quality of your diet, increasing the good fats like olive oil or the avocado oil, and also improving the overall content of phytochemicals in your diet all helps to reduce your risk dramatically. And I think we're really not focused on that in medicine. We're just like, here, take this drug, I'll see you later. And people often get a false sense of security. So, oh, I'm taking my statin, I can have the fried food, or I can go to McDonald's. Or, I mean, they were talking about it selling Lipitor at McDonald's, which I thought was
crazy, insane.
But I think we really have to understand that heart disease is a complex disorder. It's not just about cholesterol, that from a functional medicine perspective, we do much more detailed workups, looking at inflammation, oxidative stress, looking at the particle size and number, looking at even your gut, heavy metal toxins, other factors that relate to nutrition, like homocysteine. And we get a really good sense of what's going on, and we then personalize the treatment. And it's very, very different approach to reducing your risk. And it's been so satisfying for me. And I've had patients who've had heart attacks, and then we follow them for 20 years and they're just great and they're healthy and they have no risk because they really have changed the cause of their heart attack. So taking a statin doesn't change the cause of why your cholesterol is messed up.
That's very true.
And I think it's, you know, I want to say heart disease is not a statin deficiency, right?
Right.
So thank you so much, Dr. Boham, Liz, for being on the Doctor's Pharmacy podcast. If you suffered from heart disease, if you are having issues with cholesterol, if you're concerned about it, someone in your family's struggling with these issues, I really encourage you to dig deeper. Don't just accept at face value that you should take a statin. Cholesterol is the problem. It's often more complex. And find a doctor or a practitioner who can help you. We're at the Ultra Wellness Center here in Lenox, Massachusetts, happy to help anybody. We're doing mostly Zoom and virtual consults now, so we can take care of anybody from anywhere. And it's just really satisfying to see how quickly people respond and fix these things and get off the medications and fix their numbers. And more importantly, they get better. They feel better. Because I don't really care about the numbers as much as how do you feel? What's your vitality, energy? Mm-hmm. And I think the side effects of these medications are not benign. And so I'm just so excited we got a chance to talk about this on the Doctor's Pharmacy. You're just a wealth of information and knowledge, and I'm so excited that we get to do these house call podcasts and get people information about things that often they're struggling with and have questions about that are kind of obtuse, but that in functional medicine, we really do a powerful job in fixing.
Thank you, Mark.
So if you've been listening to this podcast and you loved it, please share it with your friends and family on social media. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Have you fixed your cholesterol? And subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll see you next time on The Doctor's Pharmacy. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Hyman. Thanks for tuning into The Doctor's Pharmacy. I hope you're loving this podcast. It's one of my favorite things to do and introducing you all the experts that I know and I love and that I've learned so much from. And I want to tell you about something else I'm doing, which is called Mark's Picks. It's my weekly newsletter. And in it, I share my favorite stuff from foods to supplements to gadgets to tools to enhance your health. It's all the cool stuff that I use and that my team uses to optimize and enhance our health. And I'd love you to sign up for the weekly newsletter. I'll only send it to you once a week on Fridays. Nothing else, I promise. And all you have to do is go to drhyman.com/picks to sign up. That's drhyman.com/picks, P-I-C-K-S, and sign up for the newsletter. And I'll share with you my favorite stuff that I use to enhance my health and get healthier and better and live younger longer.
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Just a reminder that this podcast is for educational purposes only. This podcast is not a substitute for professional care by a doctor or other qualified medical professional. This podcast is provided on the understanding that it does not constitute medical or other professional advice or services. If you're looking for help in your journey, seek out a qualified medical practitioner. If you're looking for a functional medicine practitioner, you can visit ifm.org and search their Find a Practitioner database. It's important that you have someone in your corner who's trained, who's a licensed healthcare practitioner, and can help you make changes, especially when it comes to your health.